In episode 15 of MobiCast, John and Chris teach me all about Docker Compose. Welcome to MobiCast, a weekly conversation about containerization, Docker, and modern software deployment. Let's jump right in.
Chris, Rich, welcome to MobiCast.
Hey.
Hey, everyone.
Good to hear your voices again. This week, we're going to do a little bit of a bit more of a technical MobiCast, talk about something technical for 20 minutes. But before we get started, I just thought I'd see what you've been up to this week. Chris, what have you been up to?
This week, I am fighting off a summer cold. Summer colds, they are the worst.
Those are the worst. Have you ever had a summer cold and allergies at the same time?
Maybe. But it just feels so unnatural. So unnatural to have a cold during June, right? Like, it's just like, I go the whole winter, you know, not even a sniffle. And here it is June and it's like full blown cold.
That's pretty brutal. Yeah. And I don't know. I guess all I can say is I'm glad I don't have one, but I am fighting off some allergies. And how about you, Rich? What have you been up to?
Work's been good, but the weather in Denver has been pretty incredible. So on Sunday, I played my first round of golf ever. 9 holes at a par 3 at some public course in Denver. And on my second shot, I laid it up like 7 feet from the hole to putt for birdie the second time ever playing. And I still think I scored a 6.
That's not always works.
I thought I'd missed out on this career of golf had I started it. And then I realized that golf is incredibly hard, and every hole thereafter was pretty terrible. So I'm back on par with everybody else.
I'm sorry. Did you say this was the mini golf, the miniature golf course, and you were on the windmill hole? Is that right?
It was a par 3 course, so it's like only one step removed from mini golf, I suppose.
And then as for me, this weekend, for the second time, I used the new ice cream maker that we got and made some cookie dough ice cream. And really, it stuck with me in more ways than one. So good, and also has just stuck right with me. All that ice cream. Anyway, so let's get started. This week, we're going to talk about Docker Compose. We talked a few episodes ago about how to set up Docker files for, you know, just the best practices when setting things up for development and for use in staging or production. And one of the tools that we use for that is called Docker Compose. And I was thinking about it a little bit, and I realized that while I've seen these configuration files and used this tool called Docker Compose, I think that I could use to understand it a little bit better. And fortunately, we have an expert with us here today that can give me a better education, help me understand. So I guess the first question I'll ask Chris is, what is it? What's Docker Compose?
Yeah, so Docker Compose is part of the standard Docker tooling tool set that kind of comes with the ecosystem, if you will. And really what it is it's you can kind of think of it as it's like orchestration for your laptop or your PC in that kind of environment. So it's a tool that is a wrapper around the various Docker APIs and commands to kind of help make that stuff easier. So instead of manually creating these Docker run commands, or you know, figuring out how to do volumes or how to inject aliases or DNS names, instead, you use Docker Compose. And so Docker Compose is that tooling around the core Docker runtime that just automates a lot of this stuff for you, makes it a lot easier. So convenience functions type thing.
Let me try to unpack that a little bit, because I'm not sure I've followed entirely. So Docker itself is, you know, it comes with a Docker command line utility that lets you say Docker start, Docker stop, Docker run. And then it also has this other capability where you can create a Docker file that has some stuff in it that when you do Docker create, it knows, oh, let me go read what's in the Docker file, and I'm going to make a Docker image based on what's in that Docker file and do stuff based on what that Docker file tells me to do. And some of the commands or some of the things that it does, and this is a question, say, for example, there's a volume mount that's specified in a Docker file. Is it possible, I guess, to specify a volume mount both either as part of the Docker file or as a Docker command? So you'd say you have a running Docker container. Can you say, hey, container, right now I want you to add a new volume mount, and here's a command for that?
So can you, after the fact of a container yes. started, like then mount a volume? No.
Yes. No. Okay. So mounting of volumes happens at creation time. And it happens, from my understanding, it happens through the Docker file specification, right?
No.
No. Okay. So help me understand exactly when mounting a volume occurs. Because I swear I saw it specified as like a, you know, in the Docker file as, hey, point this directory to this directory.
Yeah. So this is probably where it gets a little confusing. So your Docker, the Docker file itself, right? That is the sequence of commands that tells Docker how to build your image, right? And your mm-hmm. your image is something that is completely portable that will run in any
right.
any environment running Docker, right? So there's no dependencies there or anything like that, right? And so that's why the volume, you know, you're not specifying that in the actual image itself, because it doesn't even know like what host is it going to run on, right? Does that corresponding sure. file system even exist, you know, on the thing that I'm going to be running on? So mm-hmm. so that volume is specified as part of the runtime. So you can think of this compile time versus runtime, right? So the Docker image
okay.
is compile time. Volume mount is then runtime. And that's done okay. with the Docker run command, right?
Okay.
So when you do Docker run, when you say, hey, I'm going to instantiate this image as a container, when you do that, you can specify all sorts of runtime settings. So whether they be networking or file system through volume sure. mounts or DNS or IP addressing or whatnot, all that specified runtime, right? And those are some of the things, again, that Docker Compose mm-hmm. helps make a lot easier, that it helps you with.
Okay, so I think I'm clear on this now. So these runtime things are things that probably typically depend on the environment that the container is running in, the host. And they could be sent as flags or as arguments to a run command. But they can also be specified in another way. And you're saying that Docker Compose is that other way. So I can say in a Docker Compose file, I can kind of create, I can create this. I can say, okay, well, whenever I run this container, I want to send it these additional things so that it runs in the way that I want it to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, underneath the covers, essentially Docker Compose is going to be running a sequence of Docker commands. And so it may do things like it could do okay. a Docker build. It's going to do a Docker run. It could do some other commands as well, right? So it's, at the end of the day, underneath the covers, that's what it's doing. But again, instead of you having to like and manage it via, you know, purely via the command line and maybe having bash scripts to capture all these arguments correctly
right.
and set them up, right? Instead, you can just have your Docker Compose file, much more readable YAML configuration, and not worry about the specific syntax. And it's just much more efficient and effective. So if Docker didn't create Docker Compose, the open source community would have, right? It's like the most
right,
natural
sure.
thing in the world to have.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And that's exactly where my mind was going. I was starting to picture Docker commands with like six arguments afterwards, and each of the six arguments might have some long value, like a deep directory, you know, file structure, you know, a deep pointer to some file, you know, down deep in the file system, and just incredibly impossible to read. Like one Docker run command could be like four or five lines long on your terminal. And so Docker Compose like just makes a way for you to specify all that in a readable YAML way. Okay, so I get it. I understand what it is now.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I mean, that's only part of what Docker Compose does as well, right? So
sure.
there's a lot. I mean, like I said, kind of back to like it's orchestration for your local environment. So it really gets interesting when you have multiple containers that you want to be running as part of your environment, right? Like that's where it would really start getting to be quite cumbersome if you were just doing Docker run commands for each one of these things and kind of managing what sequence to start them up in and whatnot. So again, this is a problem space that Docker and Compose solves for you. And so it does allow you to like just about every kind of environment, you're almost always going to have like more than one container that's interesting to you. So it even if you're just making, you know, like the standard microservice, chances are you got a backing database for that. So at the very least, you have two containers.
Hey, this is Rich. You might recognize me as the guy who introduces the show, but is pretty much silent during the meat of the podcast. The truth is, these topics are oftentimes incredibly complex, and I'm just too inexperienced to provide much value. What you might not know is that John and Chris created the training product to help developers of all skill sets get caught up to speed on AWS and Docker. If you're like me and feel underwater in these conversations, head on over to prodockertraining.com and get on the mailing list for the inaugural course. Okay, let's dive back in.
How is a Docker Compose file organized? Like what would it have typically from top to bottom? Say we have exactly that type of situation where we have, we have a container that's got some application in it and another container that we just want to have around for, because it's got a database in it that we want to test against. What would be, is it organized by environment? Like here's a section for dev, a section for stage, and a section for production, or is it organized by lifecycle? Like here's what you do first, and then second, and third. How is it organized typically, like for that type of situation?
For the most part, you can think of it as there's sections for every container that could possibly be instantiated. And for the most part, I mean that is the base element that composes up these Docker compose files is like, what's the description of a container? So, so you'll have things like what's the name I want for the container? What image is it going to use? You can say either use a pre-built image or go build one. You can specify things like environment variables, and those can come either explicitly specified in the Docker compose file, or you can have them in a dot file that it can pull from. You can specify things like your networking settings for that container. We've kind of talked about this quite a bit now. Obviously, volume mounts. You'd specify that there as well for each one of these containers, right? And so that's the root, that's kind of like the basic core, building block of the Docker Compose files, basically these container descriptions. And so you'll have, one to N containers in a Docker Compose file. There are other associated, high level sections that you would have in there. So you might define a custom network for Docker for your containers to run on. And so that might be a top level element in there that you'd want to describe, tell Docker how to go create the network for your containers.
Okay.
You might have containers just for data volumes, that you want to use for, something that's, more persistent across container instantiations. So things like that, but it, for the most part, you're basically defining, containers, and there's one to N of them, and you can run these. Sometimes you'll want multiples of these running at the same time and startup sequence will matter. Other times you might define very specialized versions of containers for doing things like running test thing. So you may very well have a separate container definition just for doing test of the kind of like the standard container. So there might be some different settings there or whatnot. That kind of makes sense for doing that.
Right. So I'm still trying to get my head around, I understand that now Docker Compose is going to be running Docker commands for me to instantiate my containers based on my actual host and the way the containers interact with the host is going to be defined there in the Docker Compose file. But what I can't quite understand is, you had said that it can build them and it can run them. And I'm like, but where and when? So I've got all these container level, you know, container top level elements. Where am I saying build it, or where am I saying run it? How does that work?
Yeah, so that comes down to just how you invoke Docker Compose itself. So just like Docker, the Docker command line, you know, executable will take various action flags and arguments and whatnot. Docker Compose has that as well. So you can tell Docker Compose to do things like build, or you can say Docker Compose just up or down. And so up kind of means, you know, just I want to bring up either this, you can say I want to just bring up a certain name container. So I can say Docker Compose up my RESTful API, or you could do just Docker Compose up, and that would say basically bring up all containers that are specified in my Docker Compose file. So when you invoke Docker Compose, you tell it like what it is that you want to do. So likewise, you can say, hey, I want you to stop all my containers. So Docker Compose down. And then maybe you want it to kill all the volumes and remove images when you do that as well. So you Docker Compose down dash V dash RMI all type thing. Okay. So there's some, it's, you know, you're getting away from the Docker command line interface and its flags and flags, but the Docker Compose itself will have obviously for like it can it's very powerful. It has many different options, and you know, digging into that is a worthwhile effort.
Right. So I think a natural place where probably a lot of people's minds go as they're going through this process of learning Docker and after hearing what you just said is like, wait a minute. So Docker was going to relieve me of all of my dependencies on various people's environments and get me away from the, well, it works on my machine problem. But since we reintroduced Docker Compose, it's sort of like, okay, well, the files need to be where they're supposed to be and the network needs to work the way it's supposed to work. And basically, Docker Compose is where we put a whole bunch of dependencies on your host. And it's like, wait, is this kind of breaking the philosophy? Because we have to share these Docker Compose files. You know, the Docker Compose files are checked into GitHub, I think. And since they're checked in, you know, they're checked into the source code repository, all the developers share the same Docker Compose file, which means don't they have to all kind of have the same essential things on their host machines and the same basic structure of where their files are and stuff?
Kind of, but at the end of the day, like it's not really any machine dependencies. Usually like things like a volume mount in your Docker Compose file, it may very well be for things like exposing like log files. So it's kind of a convenience type uh-huh. thing. You may be exposing kind of artifacts of a build process like test coverage reports. And so, you know, typically you'd specify that stuff as locations that are relative to the home location for your entire project, right? So if it's, you know, you're working in something like Git and you're at a, you know, the root level of that project and that repo, then in your Docker Compose file, you might say like my host volume mount is the current directory and then, you know, slash volume or something, whatever the name is that you want for your volume to be, right? So and you can build that up and tear it down in your scripts itself, right? So you can definitely define all this stuff so that it literally is like it really should be that there's nothing anyone really has to do other than, hey, install Docker, install Git, do a clone, Docker Compose up, and it just works.
Interesting. I guess it's still, you know, the thing that sort of boggles my mind a little bit and that I may have to spend some time thinking about is just the fact that just where the line is, right? So you just explained, well, yes, it does give you the opportunity to introduce some host system types of dependencies, but a smart developer would make sure to make those dependencies relative so that it works on anybody's machine. That sort of jarred my the world is perfect kind of happiness of towards Docker just a little bit. It was just like a little bit of a, but you got to make sure you do this right. And then it also was sort of like, well, if you can do it in there, then why can't you do it in the Docker file? Like, why couldn't I just say, hey, Docker's got an ability to do a volume map, but it's got to be relative because it can't have any dependencies on external systems. But it can at least assume that an external system has a file system, and I can point to things on that file system from based on my own, you know, the directory from which I'm running in. So I don't know. There's just like this little bit of cognitive dissonance after hearing this whole story.
Some things to keep in mind is that one, you know, volume mounts. Like, again, I think we've talked about this in previous episodes. Really, like, it kind of goes against Docker, right? In the whole isolated, hermetically sealed container, right? So, like, we're punching holes. Like, if we're using volume mounts, we're punching holes, and we're escaping the purity of containerism. So, like, once you open that box, like, I'm sorry, you know, like, that promise is now gone. Like, you've broken the seal. So.
Right.
If you now start having issues with like, oh, it doesn't work on my machine anymore, or it's not deterministic anymore, well, that's because we broke that hermetic seal. Another thing to keep in mind is that, you know, definitely in the past, older versions of Docker, they did have a way to specify volume mounts in the actual image creation. It was confusing, and I'm pretty sure this was before Docker Compose existed. It may very well still exist. So there may be some other facility for doing this. I just personally have not had any use case for it in the last 3 years. But it may be. I don't think it is, because I just don't see how it makes sense. But it definitely was in the past, and it was very confusing. But once Docker Compose came around and Docker, the Docker command line itself allowed you to specify volume mounts, I believe that's when it was deprecated.
Okay, interesting. So now that I'm, you know, I can sort of live with this cognitive dissonance, and I can sort of understand, you know, this build time versus runtime type analogy that we're using for Docker commands versus what we specify in our Docker Compose configuration files. I think there's one last piece that I'm kind of missing is that I know that at Kelsis we do, you know, different things based on what environment that we're in. We have things that run in test mode or things that we do special for staging sometimes and things that we do for production. Do we manage any of that in Docker Compose, or is that in another system outside of Docker Compose?
Yeah, I mean, us personally at Kelsis, you know, Docker Compose is really for local development only. Like kind of going back to like, think of it as like it's almost like an orchestrator for your mm-hmm. laptop, if you will, for your laptop environment. Once we get to cloud, right, we're using other things. Like we use ECS, other people might use Kubernetes. So, you know, you wouldn't use Docker Compose there. So in that sense, yeah, you're not managing different environments in your Compose file. And you also, like this, kind of a related note to this too, is that you typically won't create separate images for each one of your environments either. So you know, this is one of the kind of like the,
good point.
Image purity things, right? You have a single image and then you use runtime information to dictate what the per environment type stuff is. So if this is mm-hmm. staging versus prod, right? That's all these environment runtime settings.
Got it. Yeah, this is super helpful. I think in my sort of muddling way of like doubting and being confused, I may have gotten to kind of a key point for Docker Compose, which is that it helps you in your dev environment on your machine. That's a great place to use it. So it can save you a bunch of typing or a bunch of weird scripts that have lots of Docker commands in them so that you can bring up and bring down your environment and build it and do those things with just quick little one-line commands.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's also super useful as well, like in CI environments. So when you're running tests and those tests require more than one container to be running, like Compose sure. is like a must-have type thing.
Right. So your CI environment may be something that where your containers are just running on a bare machine instead of in an orchestrated environment like ECS or some other
correct.
Built-up orchestrated environment that has its own way of dealing with containers and images.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. Cool. All right. Well, anything else to add before we close off for today?
No, other than Docker Compose, it's a good thing and do it.
Right on. Thanks. Thanks for joining us, Chris and Rich. Talk to you next time.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye. Well, dear listener, you made it to the end. We appreciate your time and invite you to continue the conversation with us online. This episode, along with show notes and other valuable resources, is available at mobicast.fm/15. If you have any questions or additional insights, we encourage you to leave us a comment there. Thank you, and we'll see you again next week.